Our guest today is one of those business leaders that seems to be so far ahead of many of us that we could never sort of catch up. But the reality that he shares here today is that we can all reach incredible heights as entrepreneurs once we decide where we want to climb. He shares a lot of little tips and hacks and methods, along with his own stories about how he went from not being confident as a business leader to incredible success. And the questions often come down to what vision you have. Once you have that, you can find people to learn from and simply take your next step. We talk about his figuring this out in terms of his own life, but we also get into some writing tips and strategies because writing was a big part of what led to business success for him. Please welcome to interview 56, Virgil.
First off, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time out of what I'm sure is a busy schedule. And I think on your part of the world is nighttime now. One thing that I love to let people do at the beginning of every episode, it's kind of become a theme because I feel that we always would introduce ourselves maybe a little bit different depending on the audience or where we are showing up in the world or even what our mind is like when we wake up on any given day. And so if I were to allow you to introduce yourself, who are you and what do you say that you do?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm truly honored. I love your podcast and I'm honored to be here. Well, my name is Virgil. I'm a Dutch guy who is working with a lot of creators at this moment to build, launch, and scale their courses. And that's what I do. I help people moving forward in this aspect. So basically, in a nutshell, is I help people monetize their minds and package it in a digital course so you can serve people on massive scale, in a nutshell.
And I think one of the things that catches everybody's attention, whether it's there or not, when somebody else goes to look up your Twitter feed, but the idea of building that $10 million business in course creation is something that's definitely eye-catching. I'm sure that's by design. But beneath that hook point of kind of like having people appreciate the stuff that you do, what is the story that you went through in building that?
Well, the story is quite, every time I talk about this 10 million is like a massive thing. And every time I also get shocked by it in a way, because when I started, I didn't expect anything like it. But the thing that leads up to it is that I was a guy who had a dream and I went to various jobs and I tried to do a lot of different things, but nothing really, really stuck out to me to move forward. And there was a point in life where I met basically a 19-year-old kid and that was incredible. And he said to me like, "Hey, Virgil, I see you on social media and stuff. But you're like this 42-year-old guy at the time. But I want to ask you this. Is it possible that you go to your bank account right now, take out 10 grand and do anything you like with it?" And I was like shocked, right? I was like, "No, I cannot." I said, "Okay, but I can." And basically this guy picked up his phone and he showed me like continuous sales through e-commerce. He said, well, I do this and this is what I do. And I was so intrigued by that concept that we started talking together and we became friends. And basically, we decided to join forces because I was really good with selling and marketing and building teams and stuff like that. And he was really good with this e-commerce thing. And so we tested the market out. We asked if there's a need for it. And we only operated in Holland. And people were really asking for e-commerce courses. Was Amazon was a thing back in the day, right? And in Holland, everybody was talking about it. So we started to test out and create a very simple course. We put it out there and people started to run with it. It really worked. And we built and scaled. We found another partner on board who was really good with marketing and was really strategic. So basically me and two other people came together. We had a dream. We built it and we started moving forward. And obviously, we were running into troubles with actually scaling our business. So we had incredible help from mentors all around the world to help us move forward. And really what we did was invest in ourselves, We had mentorship and coaches. We just literally listened to what they said and did that. And that gave us the incredible result of a $10 million in 4 years' time. So it wasn't easy. You know, I sit here saying, explaining the story in 5 minutes flat maybe. But there were a lot of ups and downs in there. But that is basically in a short version how that came to be with just one conversation, a really good connection, asking the audience what they wanted, and e-commerce in this case. We gave it to them. We got mentorship to help us go to barriers and barriers. And eventually, after 4 years' time, we hit that impressive milestone.
You mentioned that word mentorship, and I have a really good book by Russell Brand called Mentors. And I know there's a few books like that on the idea of mentorship, and it's often a word that we hear in interviews and stuff, that mentors helped us get here, or that you were a mentor to someone else, find a mentor, things like that. So I'd love to talk about that for a second, because I also appreciate the phrase, when the student becomes the teacher, and trying to fulfill that concept for ourselves. Like, I feel about it in podcasting when I think about someone like Pat Flynn, right? I'm like, I just got to keep working, and then someday we'll be colleagues almost, right? And it's getting closer and closer to that every day. And so when you reference the idea of mentors and coaching, is there anyone in particular then or now that you really look up to in terms of being a creator yourself?
Well, the one person who changed it all for me and for my business partners back in the day was Russell Brunson. And until this day, I still look up to him when I was nobody, so to speak. And when we went through his concepts about marketing and funnels, and we reached the very first milestone, that was the 2 Comma Club Award. It's the very first award you can get in the ClickFunnels community, where you run $1 million in sales to one funnel. And eventually that ended, that we did it 10 times, so to speak, to that same funnel, which awarded us to the 2 Comma Club X. Well, the thing here is that that meant Russell Brunson specifically was, first of all, a great storyteller. So the way how you consumed his content was really pleasant and easy. It was not too technical. So it was like a breeze to go through it. But there was one thing, like you just mentioned in this intro to this question, where you said that the student becomes the teacher. And I truly resonate with that. Why? Because first of all, you go to a mentor, you invest a lot of money in yourself, then you're going to consume that content. And what will happen over time, you're going to digest that content. And there is a point where you're going to deliver that message again to the next generation, so to speak. That can be your clients or peers you work with, or affiliate partners. But what I've learned there is that when you teach, you become better. So it becomes like full circle almost. So you're going to get the mentor, you're going to get all the concepts, and you're going to implement them and take action upon it. And you're going to discard the mind. And that's one of the teachings that I learned outside Russell Brunson's teachings. But the thing of the mind is a very important thing. So you just stick to the concepts and principles people do before you had success. And what will happen when you're going to share those concepts, but for example, with your team or with your clients, what will happen, you reinforce those concepts and beliefs in your own system, that you get better by sharing it. So it's almost a beautiful spiritual alignment, you know, that comes full circle. And that's what I love about the whole concept of investing in yourself.
I love that you share Russell Brunson specifically, and that you name that and claim him as a mentor, because I feel like the other thing that happens, and I'm sure it's just us being wrapped up in ego, but a lot of times we'll say a generic idea like mentors, or as I said, like other podcasters, and we're not willing to put ourselves out there to say who that person is, because it's like, we don't want to seem less than or give away the secrets. I'm not sure why it is, but there's a tendency to say mentors and not name it. And that's why I really appreciated you saying that, because I feel like it's so valuable to A, allow other people to know, hey, if I look at the archives and the history of Russell Brunson, I can learn something. Of course, we want them to learn from you too, now that you're able to pass on that knowledge. But I think it just shows a really good example of how we're all students in this game of life and in this game of business. And so thank you for sharing that. I too, learned a lot from him, you know, the different secrets books. But because I didn't build specifically a funnel and a product and then market that, I always felt like I was learning at more of like a broad understanding of what a guru like Russell Brunson talks about with marketing. And then I'll be quicker able to go back once I'm building a product or service off of this show to be able to learn it quicker. You know, I wanted to know, but I wasn't really putting it into practice. So it would be cool to talk a little bit more about the practice, because people who are just starting out in this world hear the word funnel. I'll add a side note. I feel ClickFunnels as a brand gets a bad rap sometimes. And I think it would be neat to talk about, what the heck do you mean when you say funnel?
It's a good point. Yeah, the thing is here that I so resonate with what you say about this. And especially when you are not familiar with the concept of a funnel, I like to give you some examples how I understand it. Because first of all, English is not my first language. So it is very hard to understand concepts right when somebody explained. And that's where somebody like Russell comes in and explains it in such a simple way. So basically, to explain a funnel in the easiest way possible is to compare it first in the early days before funnels were a thing. Funnels always existed, but before it actually became like famous, we were always talking about a website. And a website you have to compare to like this big folder of your service or product where people need to go through and need to find their own way. And a funnel basically is like one specific page out of that big folder, which explains specifically one unique problem with one unique solution and how you can progress forward. And the funnel's main purpose is to drive you from somebody who is not aware at all about anything what's happening in your world to, one, getting you to know you, how you can solve that specific problem, and what kind of end destination you can offer to that specific person who enters that funnel. And along the way, you're not gonna, like on the website, try to teach everything and show everything and tell everything. That funnel has the main purpose to just deliver value that you enter inside the world of the creator, so to speak. And the world of every creator, and especially when you're just starting out, your world is your newsletter. And I know newsletters are really popular nowadays. They had a bad rep in the day, but now they're really coming back. But they always were a thing. Newsletters were a thing. And your world should be a newsletter. And what happens there? You should compare the funnel where people come in, like the door towards your house. And in your beautiful villa, the newsletter, there you are going to show them around how the house looks. You're going to show a lot of your personality. And you're going to teach them about what you are about. In short, you're going to build a relationship. So that's in a nutshell a funnel, so to speak. And then, the next thing, which I really liked you to, which you also explained before, was like ClickFunnels has a bad rep. Well, you know what? ClickFunnels has a bad rep because Russell and his team is everywhere in marketing. So I can imagine that you then think, oh, wow, he's here. And everywhere I go, I see him. And then he's talking. I give you a book. I'm going to give you this. And now I'm fed up. And that's why it has a bad rep. But I like to touch upon that, right? If you want to sell something and you're only going to talk once about it, and then people will hear that, but they will not take action. Because studies show that people need to at least see something 7 times before they consider to take action. And this is a very important part, right? Before they consider to take action, any action. So that means you need to bombard people constantly. And the people who are don't like it or say, hey, this is not okay or this is too much, what will happen? Those people will never buy from you anyway. But I'm so happy that Russell Brunson bombarded me with messages, and it took me like years to take action on it, because the moment I entered his funnel, I walked into his house, that is the ClickFunnels community, my world changed. I learned so much. I met so many incredible people, and it took me to the Comic Club X Award. So, you know, it depends how you look upon it, so to speak.
Well, for sure. And I feel like one of the other points to make is when we look at something like ClickFunnels also getting a bad rap is around the idea of people selling crap, but selling it really well. And then being bad with refunds and things like that, because there's not a strong policing of who's allowed to use ClickFunnels, at least at the front end, right? And that's perhaps one of the things that Amazon does very well over the years and have gotten better and better at, is really protecting the buyer. And if the seller has a bunch of bad reviews, then they're going to be booted off the platform. And I feel like, I don't know where it's at with ClickFunnels right now, but there was a point where people were making a lot of money really quickly. And really, the product and service didn't match up against the price point, but the ability to, I guess people would use the word trick someone into buying early on in those touch points, maybe after the second one, because the video was so good and the offer was so great and you click and then it's like, whoa, but the deliverables weren't there. So I feel like that was kind of another piece of it. But to me, that also exists in the physical world.
In my specific case, with building up to the road of the Two Comma Club X Award, we use solely paid traffic. So we bought, we created ads, we placed them, and we optimized the shit out of it until it converted. And then we put $1 in and we got $2 out and we started recycling. Well, that sounds way simpler than it is in practice, because it is quite hard to optimize, to do the right, find the right content that converts and that sort of stuff to get them in your funnel. But nowadays, I truly believe that's a way, right? If you have a shit ton of money and you have the ability to test, go that route. But most of you guys who are starting out don't have an advertising budget to start in that way. So what you then do, it all comes down to go organic. And organic goes slower, but in my opinion, your relationship that you build with people is way more solid over time. So you need to have a longer time frame and you have a little bit more patience, but the outcome will be bigger. So how do you do that? You choose a platform. Well, I love Twitter, now called X, right? I love that because it is a very low barrier of entry. Look, you're not going to start up a podcast because you can say how hard and tough it is to scale a podcast. So I wouldn't start there. I wouldn't go on YouTube straight away because maybe you're not that good on camera. You have the technical stuff not right. LinkedIn is a little bit a big barrier for starting people. Young people start out who believe that LinkedIn maybe only for people with ties, which is not completely true. But I understand that sensation. But Twitter or X gives you the possibility to write and connect. And that is the easiest way to get started. So it all starts with creating great content. And what is great content? Great content are, like you said, are in stories. You need to tell stories. So the next question that always arises with people when I explain to tell stories on social media is, how do I find the stories to tell? Well, It is way simpler than you think. And I like to use a concept that's called, from a book called Storyworthy. Matthew Dix is the writer's name, if I'm correctly. Correct me if I'm wrong, if the writer is not good. So Matthew Dix, out of the top of my head. And he uses a concept, and that is called homework for life. And homework for life is basically what he does in a nutshell. He's collecting small stories each and every day. So not the grand stories like how you conquered the world on a battle elephant and you fought like alien invasions. No, it's more like the simple things that happened in your life. So, and what you do, you make an Excel sheet, and every day at the end of the day, you just write a few words about, today I took my dog to the vet and they found like an allergy and I got a blue painted spray to spray her every day. Well, silly story in your eyes, right? But the beautiful thing is that people relate to the simple things. They don't relate to me saying, I made 10 billion bucks and I have this and I have that, because that is so far away from people you want to share your things with. But they do relate to a dog who gets ill and gets blue paint. But only the stories is not enough. So there are a lot of writing concepts like PAS and AIDA. And maybe if you don't know what I'm talking about now, don't bother. I use a very, very simple framework that in everything, and that works always for me. And it goes like, I create a story, then I tie a lesson to it. And then at the end of the lesson, I give a call to action. So in a nutshell, I'm going to talk about Boomy, my dog, who got an allergy and he's painted blue. And then I'm going to say, well, if you like to make it in this market, you need to stand out. And I like Seth Godin, the purple cow, they'll become the blue Boomy. So if you do that, you will stand out. So I transition to the lesson, right? And then after the lesson, I'm going to say like, you know what? If you really enjoyed this conversation, I love you to sign up for my newsletter where I share multiple stories like this. I open the door to my villa. I open the door to the funnel and I invite them into my house. Some will come in, some will not. Both are fine. So if you do that every single day, sharing stories like that, you're going to start seeing results from the people start to reach out to you, sending you DMs, and your little email list starts to grow. And then there's a next step, what you can do next. But that's maybe a topic for another podcast, or maybe we can cover it here. I leave that entirely up to you.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I know that you said you don't have to worry about AIDA or those different frameworks. But naturally, people would be like, okay, I do want to look it up, though. So why don't we just give that to them? What are one or two of those other frameworks that you have now solved in an easier way for them? But when it comes to templates or frameworks, like, why do people use those? Because that was something that I was shocked. Like, I don't think people do know at all.
True. Well, there are multiple ways to create or to write, right? In a compelling way. And before I dive into the writing aspect of it, I think I'm going to give you some homework first, and that is to read just one simple book. And that is At We Copy by Joe Sugarman. And there he explains how you can write a story with a simple framework and how you can use that each and every time. Because the risk with going into all those frameworks is constraint, in my personal opinion. So if I go to, for example, in a PAS, it's called Problem Agitation Solution Framework, which just means I start with a problem, I make the problem bigger, and then I offer the solution. Let's say you're going to follow that, and there are multiple ones, but let's take this one for this sake as an example. When you're going to start creating content and you're going to constrain yourself in that framework, what will happen that most of your content will sound the same? And that is something that you don't want as a storyteller. So that's why I always share, I step away from those concepts and I'm going to be more fluid with my storytelling through that story, lesson, call to action, because then I create way more freedom for myself. And but it is up to you entirely what works best for you. So one, pick up the book of Joe Sugarman, At We Copy. It's like in my opinion, the only copywriting book you need to pay attention to. There are multiple ones, but this one is the easiest to read. It's very entertaining, and you're gonna get a proper understanding because this guy is the best paid copywriter of all times, even until this day. So imagine this guy wrote copy in the 70s and outperforms copywriters today, even if in the increase of the currency of the today, right? Everything is more expensive. Mm-hmm. So you can see the power there. So that's my two cents about, you know, writing frameworks and execution of that.
Yeah, I'll definitely check that out. It's a book that I haven't seen. I remember the first one that you had mentioned about stories I have read, but that particular book I haven't. I had the honor of interviewing Brendan Kane on this show in a previous episode, and he wrote Hook Point and 1 Million Followers. I feel like with just the attention-grabbing headlines, he's pretty powerful. And then Nicholas Cole and the Category Pirates with Snow Leopard, and just the idea of category design. And then you take that copy, I think you would have one incredible triangle of resources when it comes to, let's say, building a landing page. So when somebody themselves is starting out and they see someone like you succeeding with the course creation, we just talked about your journey specific to running that business model, but they haven't yet started. A lot of the things that you just shared, stories and building your newsletter and this, is definitely where they should start. But when you see people make mistakes, what are some of the things that you feel people often get wrong? And maybe we can't stop them because when you start out, you got to figure it out yourself. But if we were to talk about somebody going to start their own now, what do you think you could avoid some pain for them, assuming, like you said, they maybe don't have a budget to get started?
Well, first of all, it starts in the mind, right? Many people I work with who start out, or even seasoned entrepreneurs, veterans, all battle with the same thing. And that's basically one, imposter syndrome, and two, procrastination. Then don't take action. So there are a lot of tactical things you can do, right? So, for example, how you can find the right, you can find the right concept, what you want to bring to the market, and then package that knowledge and then sell it through a funnel. I call it a tactic because you need to follow certain steps to bring something to market. Like Russell Brunson say, find a hot market, ask what they want, and give it to them. You know, that's a tactic. That is nothing to do. Everybody can do that. But the only thing is that the mind often stops people from taking action. So if you begin, the very first thing that you need to do is find a group of people around you who are going to support you. Because most people don't understand what you are about to do. For example, your parents, your friends, they all have jobs. Your parents maybe like to see that you get a proper job and, you know, get married, buy a house and retire. But an entrepreneur or a creator are people who are more the adventurous-like type, who take risks. So when you are surrounded by people who are holding you back, and your mind internally is going to holding you back because your mind is saying it is not possible, it's not going to work, you need more content, you need to learn, you need more books, I'm going to start tomorrow, all these things play a role. So the very first thing I would do when you start out is, one, find accountability partner, somebody who is on the same trajectory as you are, somebody who really understands what you are about, what you want to achieve, in this case, setting up your own business. Then what you're going to do, you're going to connect with this person each and every day. You're going to ask each other like three questions and keep it very simple. Don't plan hour-long meetings because that will lower your energy and you cannot perform at all. You're going to go on a call or a voice message and you ask three questions. One, what did you do yesterday? Two, what are you going to do today? Three, what do you need help with? Answer those questions, and what you will notice is that those meetings will be shorter and shorter because you keep each other accountable for where you go. So that's the very first part, right? So when you have that accountability partner, then you're going to need to find out, okay, What is the number one problem that I've solved over the years? What is the thing that I'm passionate about when I'm at a birthday party? I love to talk about for hours. What is that thing? What is that subject where people hang on your lips and people say, wow, you really, really are cool at this? So you need to identify first what you're passionate about. And second of all, what is that one problem and one solution that you can bring to market? So that is the second part. Then the final part is again full circle to Russell Brunson's concept of find the hot market, to ask what they want, three, to give it to them. In this case, go talk to people in the market, not your friends. Don't go ask, hey, I'm with your friends. I'm going to start this course creation business. What do you think? And people are going to say, yeah, it's a great idea. I love it. They never intend to start a course. They're going to say everything is cool because they love you. That's how people are. There's not really data that you want to go on. You want to go on people outside. You're going to build, you're going to go on social media, in this case, Twitter, and you're going to DM people. You're going to connect with them. And then you're going to ask, hey, I have some questions. I have this and this idea. I want to present. What do you think? Is it something that you might like? And you're going to do that a lot. So that is what you're going to do. So then you validate your idea. And then you have a very high success rate when you take these steps just mentioned.
When you say a lot in terms of going and asking people in the market, are you talking 5, 25, 200? Like, what would you suggest if you were mentoring someone?
Good question. The thing is, everybody's talking about the concept Dream 100. You see it a lot on Money Twitter, and everybody talks about Dream 100 and there are multiple ways how people explain it. Well, the original concept Dream 100 is an old concept that comes from the 80s, and the father of it is a guy named Chet Holmes. Chet Holmes wrote a book called The Ultimate Sales Machine. If you are in business, that is a must-read book, even if you're never going to sell in your life, because he explains the importance of relationships. So his concept comes now in this time and in this day and age. Well, the Dream 100 basically is as follows. You're going to create a list, an Excel sheet, 1 to 100, and then you're going to put people on that list you like to be associated with. It can be big guys, small guys, it doesn't matter. And very important is that you shut down the mind. That you don't going to think like, oh, we're going to put Virgil on the list. Oh, but hang on a minute. Virgil's on our podcast and he does this and this. He will never reply. No. I'm not going to put him on it. No, don't. Shut out the mind. Just put everybody who is in your niche that you just did in the previous steps. You ask your audience, you know, you have a problem and a solution. You want to present in a certain area. So you're going to put people who have compatible audiences, so to speak. You're going to put them on that list. So when they're on that list, every single day you're going to take like 4 or 5 people off that list and you're going to interact with them. You're just going to say, how are you doing? Or you comment on their content, or you send them valuable content, anything to get on their radar. What you will notice that in the beginning, nothing much will happen because people don't really come back to you because who is this? But over time, people start to react. And basically 3 great things can happen when you start having conversations with people on your Dream 100. And that is 1, they might be a client in the future. 2, they can become an accountability partner, even better than the one that you found in the beginning. Somebody who's really aligned with you can be, or a business partner or something else. Or it can be a mentor or a growth partner or anything else in that order of thinking. So by doing that thing, 5 people a day, you can create a win-win-win situation for yourself where you create relationships, not on autopilot because it takes hands-on, but the relationship that you form will be so solid. And if over a 12 to 18 months time, your Dream 100 list is filled with people who you are really well connected with, who will buy from you, who you're going to work together with, or who you're going to sell to. So that is a very powerful tool to use, especially in the beginning.
Yeah, I love the concept of Dream 100 and Chet Holmes. I feel like for me, it kind of becomes an informal Dream 1000 because in many ways, I started with a spreadsheet very similar to what you're sharing with the tab Dream 100. And then this is actually something I spoke about with Mike Metzger, who wrote the credibility method. And he was on an earlier episode as well. And we talked about the idea that you often end up, and this is what happened with you and I, essentially following all those principles without making note of it or documenting it per se anymore, because you start just operating that way online. And I feel like I can remember the first tweet that I wrote or the first DM that I wrote, like typing in and then backing up. No, I don't want to say that. And now it's just because through practice and repetition, I suppose, but also not being attached to an outcome, I am just operating in that way as well. And all of a sudden, like you said earlier, you start sharing stories or you start connecting, opportunities start coming your way. I know that people don't believe that that's true, even though they hear you say it, because I went through that. And maybe we all do, or some less than others, like Logan Paul and Jake Paul figured it out pretty quick. But for me, starting to see, like just last night, someone write and being like, hey, would love to work with you sometime. And used to be that, okay, well, this is probably someone with 7 followers who's thinking of starting a podcast, but has been too scared to for 2 years. No, I went to LinkedIn and she has like 55,000 followers and is a really renowned public speaker and things like that. And I was like, wait a second, is that a fake account? So I look, no, it's a real account, right? These opportunities start to come in and you have to kind of like realize like, oh, this is the way that networking, or like Mike likes to share, building credibility in your community just comes about a little bit more organically too, which is pretty cool. When you reference the technical, I know that it can be hard as a real guru and expert like you are in course creation to break things down when it comes to the like steps of going from, okay, you have this idea, but is it too broad? Is it too niche? Will it sell? Will it won't? Going to market and asking people is the kind of like boots on the ground in the mud and muck, figuring it out for sure. But like when someone is first coming up with that idea, how do you help them recognize like, hey, I should help you start a business on how to start a YouTube channel? Is that too broad? Or is it more like you should start a YouTube channel on how to cook vegan food? Or, you know, how do you think about that question that people struggle with?
Yeah, that's specifically a question that is about the niche, right? And there are multiple ways of approaching your niche. My personal experience is that especially when you start out, don't stress too much about it. And it's a little bit advice that you might think, yeah, but that doesn't help me. But let me explain. But the important thing is that you start and that you have sort of a direction where you go. So don't go, like you say, a YouTube channel for everybody, because then the easiest way to always start with a niche is to serve yourself. Like a year ago, I know Kieran Drew talks a lot about that concept, and there are multiple people who talk about serve your shadow. I don't know who popularized it, but that concept is really, really, really great, because that moment, you're just going to make content of what happened about you in the past. So you know exactly what happened to you a year ago, and that might resonate to people in your audience, so to speak. And I always like to say that eventually, by building those relationships and start putting out things serving yourself, what will happen is that the niche eventually will find you. So at some point, people will come up and say, hey, I really like to learn more about this, or I really like to learn more about this. And then you're going to flow about it. And what I want you to try to prevent and make you do is to go niche down and believe that that is the holy grail, because people change. Everything, markets change, people change, you change. When you look in the mirror 10 years ago, you look totally different from now externally. But internally, you change as well, because what you thought 10 years ago would be really cool, today is totally absurd to you. And by that concept alone, I like to approach the niche like fluid. It is okay to pivot and change. It's okay to change direction. There's nothing wrong with that. People will not find it weird because it happens in their lives every single week. People change. So that is my two cents about the niche. And that's how it happened to me. You know, I didn't stand up, woke up one day and thought, I'm going to create an e-commerce and bring a course and I'm going to bring that to $10 million. I never had that idea. We just started out with a passion and to helping people. And we started relating to people and that formed us to where I are today. And look at me now. I quit that course creation business. Why? We did incredible well. You know, we could easily bring that to 30, 40 million if we wanted to. But the thing is, we were with three business partners who are changing in on our journey. And the person who was the face of the course eventually started to feel, hey, e-commerce is not my thing anymore. And then we could approach it from a business perspective and say, well, good, then we're going to put other courses in and we're going to hire like a CEO who's going to build strategies. We're going to put other course creators. That was all possible, but our hearts wasn't there anymore. We changed. And the change was, our team felt it. We had a team of 14 people who without them, we weren't able to do what we did. You know, those people carried it together with us. And they start to feel that we are changed. So, and then what happened? We started to drip down to our clients who start to feel that we were changing. You know, we started to make stupid mistakes. We started to do things that were totally not appropriate. Things went not wrong, but were different. And we changed. So we decided to say, hey, okay, this is it. We are here now. We're going in different directions. And now I'm all of a sudden teaching people how to build courses, which was never the intention. It's something that came to me because I opened up on Twitter and started talking. So that's a little bit the example how a niche can find you, so to speak.
Yeah, that is really important because I feel like people do often not even post because they're worried about like, oh, this is off brand or something like that. And so I think it's really valuable to know that it can be broad and then we can dial in the niche when it comes to a very specific product or even a module for someone in something you're trying to teach. And I feel like I haven't looked it up, but I'm sure there are a few, if not a lot of podcasts where people specifically teach course creation as solo episodes, like bite size. Like I've seen some really good business ones and they'll, you know, be like 100 episodes, how to start your business in 100 episodes. I'm going to take you through this. Actually, Russell Brunson's podcast on marketing that he did from his car is a pretty good example, yeah. Right? Each day, I'm going to share a little thing that helps you with building a business. And I'm going to keep it simple, bite-sized format. And here, take this. But if you go and start listening to it now, it's like, oh, I got 600 episodes to get through till I start my business. So a lot of people procrastinate because they're in that learning mode. If somebody feels like they're ready to go take the next step, build this actual course out, they could hire you perhaps. If they didn't, and you were trying to give them some tips right now, there are so many platforms. If you Google how to start a course, you're going to get, you know, Teachable, Kajabi, Thinkific. Maybe you even mean a text-based email course and you're not even creating video. So again, it can be hard for the expert to take that helicopter view and be like, oh, okay, wait a second. Somebody might not even know what a course is or how to produce one. So when it comes to that, I'll call it could be boring, but I think super valuable stuff of like, how do you actually package this thing? How do you coach clients through that process?
Well, first of all, you're right. There are multiple ways that lead to Rome and all work for the people who actually executed that. So what you have to be careful about, first of all, is what fits you. You are the start point. You need to execute. So if you try to mold somebody else's ways and method, it might not work because you don't feel like it. So the first thing that you want to do is use your intuition. When I listen to a mentor or a person who teaches, do I feel comfortable, first of all, in the way how it is presented? One, do you feel comfortable with that person? Two, did the person actually did what he says he has done, right? Is there some form of proof about that? Well, that, you know, you can show that in many, many ways. But the thing here is that you need to understand that how are you feeling the most comfortable way of doing something? So that means to create a course in a nutshell here is you can do it in multiple ways. Like you said before, you can create an email course where you only write You can create a video course. You can do it only on MP3s, or you can do a combination of the three. Everything is possible. But well, first of all, you need to see it from the perspective. What would I like? You as the creator, what would you like to consume? Because if you do what you like, what will happen? You're going to share the story, and people really don't buy products, so to speak. There's so much information out there. People buy an organization of content in a structured way. But again, that's nothing new, because there are a million of those as well. So the final part where you differentiate and where you make the choice is, what is the personal experience of that person, and do I feel connected to that? So I always say to people who want to work with me, I say, listen, I'm not a course guru. So that's, I don't like that word at all, because I'm not. Because I don't know it all. The only thing I know is what I experienced, what worked for me. And I share that with you, and I invite you to try it. And if it feels right, and you use the same steps as I do, and it feels right for you, you probably will have the same results. So that is a little bit my idea about learning anything. In this case, we talk about courses, right? But it is about anything that you want to learn.
Took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say, is there anything that you feel like you would like to touch on that we'd be leaving out when it comes to learning and teaching, which are really, you know, a Venn diagram that are so close together when it comes to somebody trying to package this stuff to teach somebody, like you said, something that they talk about at a party that they're great at. Let's say it's starting a podcast or teaching somebody fitness, a diet plan, whatever it is. When it comes to the teaching and learning, though, is there anything that you would like to advise people to help them in that world?
Well, in the teaching method, is like what I experienced always is that you like to create like a journey, similarly how you tell stories. So, of course, you have the structure, right? You have modules, you have an introduction, and then you have all the points you like to cover. And then maybe at every end of the lesson, there's a summary. Again, that's tactical, right? That's something you can literally, if you, you know, Russell Brunson make the concept funnel hacking, you buy a great course that you think is great, you buy that, look at the structure, and then you model it in that way because that person probably tested it out, and then you put in your own content. Well, that's straightforward. But what makes you unique and what makes it you is that you create a journey from the for a person or a client from the moment they enter your world. So not in the course. A lot of people start, oh, we're going to create a journey in the course. They talk about customer journey. But a customer journey doesn't start at the product. Customer journey starts for the very first point of contact that you have with somebody. And then you take them by the hand on a journey. And you need to define that journey for them. And how you define the journey is not by features and tactics. I'm going to teach you how to package a course. I'm going to tell you how this is going to work. I'm going to tell you how to build this funnel. No, what you're going to share in that journey is what will happen by your with your help, what the desired outcome of that person will be. So it will never, I always talk about the first basic rule is that you have like an outcome that's external. So in this case, in my case, course creation, let's take your example, podcasting. I'm going to teach you how to become a better speaker, how you can edit your podcast and then put it out there and market it. That's an external desire. But that is not the main reason why people buy your product, because they didn't woke up to say, hey, I'm going to create a course or I'm going to start a podcast because that's cool and that's where it ends. No, somebody has a desired outcome why they wanted to try podcasting or courses. For example, they want to become financially free. Some others want to work less so they have more time to spend with their family, and they use your solution as a vehicle to go from where they are to where they want to go. And that is the journey that you want to share. And if you acknowledge that, people feel like they are heard. People are going to connect with you on a way deeper level. And that goes all the way to your course creation to go to the answer of the question. When you enter your course, again, you have that similar journey. We are here to help you to create freedom. Let's say that's your end desire. And this is how we're going to do it. So do this, this, and this, and this, and this. But pay attention to your mind and your feeling, and that you are sometimes shut down, go for a walk, because that's really equally important. because you always tie this to the internal end desire at the end. That's why people go very successfully to your course. And that is my approach to courses. And again, my approach.
Yeah, that's a special thing to point out. I'm glad I asked that question because I feel like that is really powerful for regardless of the product or service, the thing we're trying to deliver to help and serve people is the idea of the external versus the internal change that it has for people, I think is super valuable. The last kind of little, you know, bullet point, or if we were creating this into a blog post that I think would really help people is the idea of pricing. Now, granted, similar to going to market to test a niche or a topic, I feel like pricing is another thing that you have to know your audience. It's very contextual. I understand that if I just asked you what price should people put, you would say you can't answer that question. However, are there things that you think people should avoid or from the wisdom you have over the years, mistakes that get made or things to think about when thinking about pricing?
Yes. Pricing is a really a topic that comes up with so many creators because it is the hardest thing to do. Well, first of all, you need to understand buyer psychology. And I don't want to go too deep in that to make it too complex. I want to keep it very simple. What you need to understand that there is a price point or there is a buyer for every price point. So how can you illustrate that, for example, by a Fiat Panda. I don't know if that's something in the States where a Fiat Panda is a cheap car versus a Ferrari. People buy the Fiat Panda, but people also buy the Ferrari. So they buy both. So there's a market for both. It depends on which crowd you position it. So that's the first thing that you need to realize. So there is no rule what your price should be because it can be anything. But to help you to determine the right price, first of all, you then need to understand that your mind is always lying to you. Your mind is always going to downplay you because imposter syndrome is something that is among a lot of entrepreneurs. And that will pop up that you might have beliefs like, I'm not good enough. I'm not there yet. I'm new. Why should I ask a lot of money for something? So your judgment on pricing is totally skewed. It's off. So the easiest way to do it is to go to your audience with a little survey. And what I do, I'm going to ask people four questions in that little survey. And I'm first of all going to ask them, well, what is the biggest problem that you have? So that's in my validation process where we talked in the beginning. Then the second question would be, if I would have a product that solves your solution, is it something that you would buy? And they would say, well, yeah, I might. And then I ask them, did you look for a solution elsewhere? So my question basically is this an incident that they come to me and for this solution? Or are they actively seeking out to get their issue solved? And then the final price that relates to pricing is, if I would bring this XYZ course out and I deliver this, and this, and I bring you to this desired outcome, what would you pay for it? So what I do, I ask the audience. And the weird thing is, and until this day it happens to me, is that people will always say at least 2 times or 3 times more than you had in your head. So again, what happens here is that your audience gives the perceived value based on what you're just saying. You haven't delivered it yet, but what you promise, they put a price tag on it. And I would go with that. That's your start point. So if you begin, ask people, they will tell you, and go with that and ignore the mind. Again, shut out the noise because your mind is going to complain. But the audience is leading. So I always say, follow the signal. The signal is, what do they tell you? Give it to them.
Right. Underlying all of this is mindset. And you've given us a tremendous masterclass on course creation. But being a great entrepreneur, I think, from beginning to end, and because of that, unless we do Rogan-like 3-hour interviews, we often have to wrap, right? And I want to be respectful of your time. But one thing that I've noticed is that mindset has been a recurring theme as well. So If you were to speak on that for a second, if you feel like there are some specific things that people should keep in mind as they develop this definition of mindset, what are some things that you would share?
There are so many things you can share on mindset, right? And there's so many concepts and there's so much information out there how to battle negative thoughts or imposter syndrome or procrastination. And I like to approach things simple because I consume only content if things are simple. So the only thing I like to touch on is this, is you need to be mindful about your words because your words are the most powerful tools that can make or break anything. And that sounds really dramatic. But when you dive deeper into that concept, it goes as follows. It is about the words that you speak out and the words that are internally in your thoughts. And you will recognize that most of the time those thoughts are negative. And that is a psychological mechanism that is there to protect you. You know, without diving deep in there, it is a survival mechanism that creates and starts those thoughts. But what is more important to understand why it's there, it's more important how do you deal with it. So what you want to try to achieve is positivity. And a lot of people say that. So yeah, you need to be positive and everything will be fine. Well, it's not so straightforward as that. It's way harder than that. But that's the base of this concept with using the right words. Every time that something negative comes up into you, for example, you think that you're not able to deliver a course in a way you believe you should do it. Well, first of all, think about all the times you've been speaking to people and people were hanging on your lips. Think about all these moments that you brought information to people or you shared a story that really that people said to you, wow, Virgil, thank you so much. That was really, really incredible. It made my day. All these moments will help you reinforce and change your mind in times when you need it. So one simple thing is pay attention to those words and don't ignore the negative words. Don't try to run away from it, like hide it. Because, you know, that's what people do by nature. You think if something bad, oh shit, all these thoughts, no, I need to drink alcohol or I need to seduce it by taking drugs or I need to, and that is a danger to be there. So what I want you to try to practice is to not run away, but turn around and look at it and acknowledge it. And that's painful in the beginning, especially when you start out, it will be painful. But what it will help you to do is to basically play jokes with it, like almost a child. I know that there's some, for example, my girlfriend is like a trauma hypnotherapist and she deals with people like this. And an exercise that she does is make fun of your mind, she calls it. And then what happens is a negative thought comes that she says something like, oh, silly mind, are you here to tell me now that I'm not good enough and I'm never going to make it? Oh, come on, get out of here. And while you do that, something happens in your mind, right? You start realizing, hey, that's really silly, right? And then it comes back again really hard. And it takes practice. You know, you need to really make an effort to always see things helpful. Like, oh, this is bad timing because I'm tired. Yeah, but because I'm tired, I learned something new and maybe tomorrow something will change. So every time you change the wording again, so that's in a simple way how I deal with it. That always worked for me. And when I share this with people, it works for them because it's so simple. So that's a little bit on mindset. But you're right. Mindset is the beginning, the middle, and the end of your journey. Your mind is the one thing that makes the difference between success and failure. Your ability to handle those negative thoughts. My two cents.
I love how you take concepts like that and you don't just give a quote. You provide something practical and tangible that people can actually apply to their lives, because using that tactic can be extremely helpful beyond business. It reminds me of one that I learned through the world of golf, which a lot of times I say, if you took all the lessons from golf, you could just go live a great life.
Yes.
Too. And it's the idea of allowing your thoughts to float by like clouds, because if we fight our thoughts, then they're going to fight back harder. But when we look up in the sky during a golf round or otherwise, what happens to those clouds? We can observe them and let them float by. And I feel like that can be really helpful You started off this episode talking about a mindset shift that you had because you were given perspective by a kid who could go grab 10 grand from his bank account and go spend it on whatever he wanted. Before I get into our theme questions that I ask everybody, which are just rapid fire, I'd like to ask you one final question about that. And it's, if you had any perspective shift yourself where you then realized whether it was money, because you could go spend 10 grand on what you wanted or something like that, was there any major perspective shift that you went through where you realized kind of like, oh, I've made it, you know?
So you hear the gecko here, this Bali, right? So animals live in the roof. So this is hilarious. Well, the perspective, a big, big lesson that I learned is that I chased money, you know, that was my only drive because I grew up, I'm from an immigrant family. My parents came from South America to Holland and I grew up there and we had a great life that we didn't have everything, right? So my sole purpose was to get as much cash as I possibly can. That was my drive. That's why, what kept me going. And I made it, you know, I became financially free. I sacrificed a lot, but trust me, a lot, also in a bad way. So I sacrificed relationships and family members. I didn't pay attention because, hey, listen, if you cannot catch up with me, I have one mission. I need to get this cash. If you don't get along, get out of my life. That was my mentality, so to speak. And when I had basically, it was a realization when I earned the Tucoma Club X Award, I remember that day well, is that my business partner sent me a message and he said, we have something cool. And I was like, what? I was middle of something. And he said, we did $10 million in sales. We have the Tucoma Club X. And I was like, what? That's insane. I didn't even realize it. But that moment of euphoria, I don't know if that's the word in English. Yeah, euphoria, like internal bliss was like very briefly. Because after that, I felt like in a gap. Like, all right, I've chased this goal for 30, 35 odd years. Now what? Is did it? Because I always believed that that was the end goal. When you have money, hey, it's over. You can do anything you want. But I realized that was not the case. So my big realization after soul searching afterwards, when we stopped the company, I had a lot of time to do nothing. We need to dissolve the company. That was obviously like a whole process that took a year. And in that year's time, I needed to take a step back. I had no clue what to do. And I forced myself to sit with myself and look at my fears and thoughts and things. And I realized that money wasn't the thing, but I didn't know what was. And that was really depressing. Until after, to make a long story short, I found out that the thing that drives me personally, and I believe most people, is purpose. What is it that you get up out of bed for, but always makes your heart sing? Not like a brief satisfaction, like having a lot of cash or buying a cool watch or having a great house. What makes you get up in bed? What makes you jump out of bed and say yes and sing for joy? And with me, that is what it has always has been, is helping people and moving them forward. Because when somebody moves forward with only one silly thing that you shared, that makes my world. And that is what purpose is about. And that is why my one realization of it all is, don't chase money. Follow your heart. And it sounds really cliche. I know. You know, if you would say that to me like 5 years ago, I would really laugh in your face. But really, you need to follow your heart because that's the most satisfaction you ever can get.
It's funny you said, if you said that to me 5 years ago, because another way to frame that question is, if you were to tell yourself 5 years ago something, what would you say? And so maybe that's the same answer and the same question. I love it. What a great opportunity to kind of drop the mic. I always ask a few theme questions because I'm so excited to tie these together someday when I hit like 1,000 interviews and just make a documentary on just these three questions. And the first one is, what is something that you yourself are learning? It may be, as we talked about, off brand, off niche, but just something that you are acutely learning right now.
That relationships matter, and not relationships from a business perspective, because that's goes without saying that you need to build relationships with people to grow your business. But the people around you in your journey towards success in the ups and the downs, don't forget them or neglect them or take them for granted, because they are the one who are with you from the beginning when it started with an idea. they will be the one to celebrate your success. They will be the one who unconditionally will love you, support you, and carry you all the way. Never, ever forget them. They are the ones that matter. All the success, all the money, and even your glory doesn't matter. They do.
Completely agree. And something that we all need to check ourselves on from time to time. That was a pretty wise piece of learning. So it may also tackle this question. But the other one that I love to ask is, you've mentioned, you know, 40 great things here today. I'm sure you have a lot of other cliches, but cliches are cliche for a reason. If you were to leave one piece of advice, just the one for the next generation, though, of all of this, what would that be?
Have fun. Be crazy. You know, don't take yourself too seriously because you're not all that. You know, you might think that you are, but you're not. You're just a guy or a girl with hopes and dreams. And have fun, because when you have fun, you're going to live adventures. When you live adventures, you're going to have stories to tell. And when you have stories to tell that inspire based on you having fun, people love that, because people are bombarded with tactics and ways how to become better. And, you know, they're all so serious. There's so much things happening in the world, right? That is so serious that it might affect you physically or mentally. So have fun and share and radiate that energy, and you're just gonna crush it.
Yeah, like Van Wilder, don't take life too seriously. You'll never get out alive.
Amen to that.
And finally, if you were to take the mic and be the interviewer, what is a question that you would ask me? It may be on these topics or otherwise, just go with your gut. If you were to ask me something, what would it be?
Well, in the intro of this conversation, you said something that made my hair stand on end. And that doesn't happen a lot, and especially with people I don't know. So that was really special. You mentioned the painting behind you, and you said that it is painted by your father and that the ashes of your brother is there. And now while I say it, my hair stands on end again. My question to you is, like, how do you cope with the loss like that? Because I cannot imagine how something like that should be. Second of all, what would be the advice that you would have for people based on that horrific experience?
Feel like we've used the word cliche 6 times in the last 4 minutes. And I subtly said it as a minute ago that cliches are cliche for a reason, which is the best cliche. But one of my favorite quotes when it comes to grief, and it probably not one that people have heard a lot, is from a Canadian poet, Shane Coizan, who says that when your heart breaks, the best thing you can do is make art with the pieces. And I grew up in a funeral home from a very young age, which from doing that, I was forced to learn a lot about grief, and there was a lot of stories in there that I could share as well that really put things into perspective. Because of that, when I'll just give the kind of what happened, I guess. Both cases were sudden. My brother Shane died in a car accident late at night. So the next morning, my dad called and said, there's detectives here. I'm not sure why. Can you come over to the house? I went over. As soon as I got there, basically, we realized the craziest part of this story, that one of the two of them had died in a car accident. We didn't know which one because they shared a car. And he was unrecognizable. And obviously, because the other one was still alive, we realized that it was Shane. And then within the next year, Ryan was really heartbroken about having shared his car that his brother died in, but also he didn't have his own family and kids and things like that. And his own health really deteriorated, even though he was 34 years old. You know, they say people die of a broken heart. But a year later, I got a call late at night. We have to go to the ICU. Your brother's had a heart attack. And so Ryan passed next morning. And so I said brothers, I was speaking quickly, but actually both of my brother's ashes are in this painting as well. And so this is something that I will use as energy that brings this really full circle, because I feel like if there was ever a reason to be a creator, and you don't even have to publish. My dad didn't publish this painting. I have it on the video here because I chose to publish. But just creating something in memory of, I think is really, really powerful in that moment, as hard as it can be. And so to go back to the specifics of both of them, for Shane, I took a bunch of pictures. I went out on a breezy day, put them in a tree. I filmed a video. I DM'd someone, speaking of networking, who did a really good cover of Over the Rainbow, because that was my mom's favorite song to sing to my brother. You Are My Sunshine. And I put that together as a video. But Ryan was a little bit different. And at that time, intuitively, it hit me a bit different too. So in that case, I wrote poetry the entire time, like in my mind at the ICU and the hospital the next morning, at the funeral home the first couple of days. I was always pulling out my phone and jotting down little bars for this poem. And then I was able to read that at the funeral. So the second question was, what do you do? And I feel like both questions can be answered in a short way by saying, create something, even if you keep it for yourself, that is a tribute to them as soon as you, before you feel like you possibly can. And I could talk on this topic for hours. So I'll say one final thing, though, in the interest of keeping it short enough, is that it's so hard in that moment to lean into other people. But going through the exposure therapy or fighting through whatever you have to do to lean into other people is so valuable. Most people want to hide, right? And so that was something that I think I did well. Right away, my buddies gathered and we went and got together, like the first night, both times. It's not easy. That's maybe another thing but it's valuable. And I have one last thought too, because this one has stuck with me forever. I think this is the second time it's come up on this show. Sister Helen Prejean laughed her ass off when I told her this. And she was like, I'll never forget that for the rest of my life. And it's just amazing. It's not cliche, but it is a quote. You don't want to use Kleenex because you want your tears to flow. And if you were to use Kleenex when you're grieving, it would be like using toilet paper to stop your diarrhea.
Yes, that's the one.
And it's hilarious. But honestly, I've never forgot that. I wish I knew who told me that, because I've literally tried to go on an internet dive to figure out who the heck taught me that. Maybe I'll find it someday. But point being, letting the tears flow, I think, is something else that I do well, right? When we grab our sweater and we push into our eyes to try and stop. It's like exactly what you said earlier about fighting the thoughts versus letting them float by, or laughing at them a bit and just kind of letting them be. So that's the longest I've ever answered a question that a guest has posed for me. But I think it's such an important topic. So thank you for asking such an important question.
I love it. I can only say that. I loved it. Beautiful answer. Beautiful.
Thank you. The final truth mic drop moment is, why and where people can find you if they want to go support your work.
Well, they can find me on my website. It's firstjobrooster.com. There's a lot of things going on there. I have a newsletter called The Building Block where I explain a lot of things. Drop on there and find me. My main platform is Twitter. I love Twitter, so find me there at The Virgil Brew. Every time people ask me, why you use The Virgil Brew? Well, the question is, I have Virgil Brewster, but I lost the password and I cannot retrieve it, so I needed to change. So that is the reason if everything's why it's so cool. So that's me. And first of all, yeah, I thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed your questioning and the conversation. I think this is a podcast people need to listen to everywhere in the world. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. And I say it almost every episode, I think, that in the future we'll have to do it again, because it's always a pleasure creating with awesome people. So otherwise, until next time, Have a great day, and thank you.
JKL listeners, thank you so much for being here. I'm having a ton of fun making these episodes recently, and that's what it's all about. I hope they're also getting better and better for you. It would mean the world if you passed the show along to friends or family that you think might benefit. Thank you to our guest, Virgil. He has a really well-rounded personal brand and is a great example of someone who creates in a realistic way, kind of from the heart, but still ties back to the vision that he has for his success. As always, we love getting your DMs or comments about the show. If you have any input on guests, topics, things that you'd like us to talk about, please don't be shy. Just let us know. Until the next episode, all the best, and remember, just keep learning.